He was gonna blow his shit before he got kicked out.
Blow his shit? I change my tone so it's not so much a question.
Blow his shit. Yeah, that was...
You looked pretty pissed, Dover says.
I can't blame you. You might have liked it here if Silas hadn't ruined it for you.
I sit back, the chicken suddenly unappealing.
Yeah, I say, glancing at Jeanette, who was watching us both curiously.
You finished, brat?
I ask her.
She nods, wiping her greasy fingers on a napkin.
I pull a 20 out of my purse and drop it on the table.
No need,
Dover says, waving it away. I lean down till we are eye to eye.
Only my boyfriend gets to buy me dinner, I say, leaving the money on the table.
I walk to the door, Jeanette trailing behind me.
Yeah, well, Dover calls. You live by that rule, you can eat for free 7 days a week.
I don't stop until I reach the car. Something happened in there, something that made Silas almost lose his shit.
I start the car, and Jeanette lets out a loud burp. We both start laughing at the same time.
No more Doritos for dinner, I tell her. We can learn to cook.
Sure, she shrugs.
Everyone breaks their promises to Jeanette. She's got that bitter air about her. We don't speak for the rest of the ride home, and when I pull into the garage, she jumps out before I've turned off the engine.
Nice spending time with you too, I call after her.
I imagine that when I walk in, Charlie's mother will be waiting for her, perhaps to chew her out for taking the car. But when I step into the house, everything is dark, except for the light underneath the door to Jeanette's in my bedroom. Mother has gone to sleep. Mother doesn't care.
It's perfect for the situation I'm in.
I get to snoop around and try to figure out what happened to me without the questions and rules. But I can't help thinking about Jeanette. About how she's just a little kid who needs her parents. Everything is so screwed up. Jeanette is listening to music when I open the door.
Hey, I say. I suddenly have an idea. Have you seen my iPod?
Music tells a lot about a person. I don't have to have a memory to know that.
I don't know, she shrugs. Maybe it's with all your other crap in the attic.
My other crap? The attic? I suddenly feel excited. Maybe there's more to me than a bland bedspread and a stack of bad novels. I want to ask her what kind of crap, and why my crap is in the attic instead of in our shared bedroom. But Jeanette has stuck the buds back in her ears, and is working hard to ignore me. I decide the best route would be to go up to the attic to check things out for myself. Now, where is the attic?
Chapter 8. Silas. The front door to my house opens as I'm putting my car in park, and Ezra walks outside, wringing her hands together nervously. I get out of the car and walk to where she's standing, wide-eyed.
Silas? She says, her voice quivering. I thought he knew. I wouldn't have mentioned Charlie was here, but you didn't seem to be hiding it, so I thought things had changed and she was allowed over here.
I hold up my hand to stop her from more unnecessary apologies. It's fine, Ezra, really. She sighs and runs her hand across the apron she's still wearing. I don't understand her nervousness or why she anticipated I would be angry with her. I shove more reassurance into my smile than is probably necessary, but she looks as if she needs it. She nods and follows me inside the house. I pause in the foyer, not quite familiar enough with the house to know where my father would be at the moment. Ezra passes me, muttering a good night, and heads up the stairs. She must live here. Silas. It sounds like my voice, but more worn. I turn and am suddenly face to face with the man in all the family photos lining the walls. He's missing the brilliantly fake smile, though. He eyes me up and down as if the mere sight of his son disappoints him. He turns and walks through a door leading out of the foyer. His silence and the assurance in his steps demand I follow him, so I do. We walk into his study and he slowly edges around his desk and takes a seat. He leans forward and folds his arms over the mahogany wood.
Care to explain?
I'm tempted to explain. I really am. I want to tell him that I have no idea who he is, no idea why he's angry, no idea who I am. I should probably be nervous or intimidated by him. I'm sure yesterday Silas would have been, but it's hard to feel intimidated by someone I don't know at all. As far as I'm concerned, he has no power over me, and power is the primary ingredient of intimidation. Care to explain what? I ask. My eyes move to a shelf of books on the wall behind him. They look like classics, collectibles. I wonder if he's read any of the books or if they're just more ingredients for his intimidation. Silas! His voice is so deep and sharp, it feels like the tip of a knife piercing my ears. I press my hand against the side of my neck and squeeze before looking at him again. He eyes the chair across from him, silently commanding me to sit down. I get the feeling yesterday's Silas would be saying, "Yes, sir," right about now. Today's Silas smiles and walks slowly to his seat. "Why was she inside this house today?" He's referring to Charlie like she's poison. He's referring to her the same way her mother referred to me. I look down at the arm of the chair and pick at a piece of worn leather. She wasn't feeling well at school. She needed a ride home, and we took a quick detour. This man, my father, leans back in his chair. He brings a hand up to his jaw and rubs it. 5 seconds pass. 10 seconds pass. 15. He finally leans forward again. You seeing her again? Is this a trick question? Because it feels like one. If I say yes, it'll obviously piss him off. If I say no, it feels like I'll be letting him win. I don't know why, but I really don't want this man to win. He seems like he's accustomed to winning. What if I am? His hand is no longer rubbing his jaw because it's now moving across the desk, fisting into the collar of my shirt. He yanks me toward him just as my hands grip the edges of the desk for resistance. We're eye to eye now, and I expect he's about to hit me. I wonder if this type of interaction with him is common. Instead of hitting me like I know he wants to, he pushes his fist against my chest and releases me. I fall back into my seat, but only for a second. I push out of my chair and take a few steps back. I probably should have hit the asshole, but I don't hate him enough to do that yet. I also don't like him enough to be affected by his reaction. It does confuse me, though. He picks up a paperweight and hurls it across the room, luckily not in my direction. It smashes against a wooden shelf and knocks the contents to the floor. A few books, a picture frame, a rock. I stand still and watch him pace back and forth. Beads of sweat dripping from his forehead. I don't understand why he could possibly be this upset over the fact that Charlie was here today. Especially since Ezra said we grew up together. His palms are now flat against the desk. He's breathing heavily, nostrils flaring like a raging bull. I expect him to start kicking up dust with his foot any second now. We had an understanding, Silas. Me and you. I wasn't going to push you to testify if you swore to me you wouldn't see that man's daughter again. One of his hands flail toward a locked cabinet while his other hand runs through what's left of his thinning hair. I know you don't think she took those files from this office, but I know she did. And the only reason I haven't pursued it further is because you swore to me we wouldn't have to deal with that family again. And here you are. He shudders, literally shudders. Here you are, bringing her to this house like the last 12 months never even happened. More frustrated hand flailing, twisted facial expressions. That girl's father almost ruined this family, Silas. Does that not mean a damn thing to you? Not really, I want to say. I make a mental note to never get this angry. It's not an attractive look on an Ash. I search for some sort of emotion that conveys remorse so that he can see it on my face. It's hard, though, when the only thing I'm experiencing is curiosity. The door to the office opens and we both move our attention to whomever is entering. Landon, this doesn't concern you, my father says, his voice soft. I briefly face my father again, just to make sure the words actually fell from his mouth and not someone else's. It almost sounds like the voice of a caring father, rather than the monster I just witnessed. Landon, nice to finally know my little brother's name. looks at me. Coach is on the phone for you, Silas. I glance back at my father, who now has his back turned to me. I assume that means our conversation is over. I walk toward the door and gladly exit the room, followed closely by Landon. Where's the phone? I ask him when I reach the stairs. Valid question, though. How am I supposed to know if he called on a cell phone or a landline? Landon laughs and moves past me. There's no phone call. I was just getting you out of there. He continues up the stairs, and I watch as he reaches the top and then turns left, disappearing down the hall. He's a good brother, I think. I make my way to what I assume is his room, and I knock lightly on the door. It's slightly ajar, so I push it open. Landon? I open the door all the way, and he's seated at a desk. He looks over his shoulder briefly and then returns his attention to his computer. Thanks, I say, stepping into the room. Do brothers thank each other? Probably not. I should have said something along the lines of, took you long enough, asshole. Landon turns in his chair and tilts his head. A combination of confusion and admiration plays out in his smile. I'm not sure what your deal is. You aren't showing up for practice, and that's never happened. You act like you don't give a shit that Charlie's been screwing Brian Finley. And then you have the balls to bring her here? After all the shit Dad and Brett went through? He shakes his head. I'm surprised you escaped his office without a bloodbath. He spins back around and leaves me to process everything. I turn and rush toward my bedroom. Brett Winwood. Brett Winwood. Brett Winwood. I repeat his name in my head so I'll know exactly what to search when I get to my computer. Surely I have a computer. When I reach my room, the first thing I do is walk to my dresser. I pick up the pen Charlie handed me earlier today and read the imprint again. Winwood Nash Financial Group. I search the room until I finally find a laptop stuffed in the drawer of my bedside table. I power it on and enter the password. I remember the password? Add that to the list of shit that makes no sense. I type Winwood Nash Financial Group into the search engine. I click on the first result, and I'm taken to a page that reads Nash Finance, with the Winwood noticeably absent. I scroll quickly through the page and discover nothing that helps, just a bunch of useless company contact information. I back out of the page and scroll through the rest of the results, reading each of the leading headlines and the articles that follow. Finance gurus Clark Nash and Brett Winwood, co-founders of Winwood Nash Financial Group, have been charged with 4 counts of conspiracy, fraud, and illegal trading. Partners for over 20 years, the two business moguls are now placing the blame on each other, both claiming to have no knowledge of the illegal practices uncovered during a recent investigation. I read another. Clark Nash cleared of charges. Company co-chair Brett Winwood sentenced to 15 years for fraud and embezzlement. I make it to the second page of search results when the battery light begins to flash on the laptop. I open the drawer, but there's no charger. I look everywhere, under the bed, in the closet, in my dresser drawers. The laptop dies during my search. I begin to use my phone to research, but it's about to die too, and the only phone charger I can find plugs into a laptop. I keep looking because I need to know exactly what happened to make these two families hate each other so much. I lift the mattress, thinking maybe the charger could be stuck behind the bed somehow. I don't find the charger, but I do find what looks like a notebook. I slide it out from under the mattress and then take a seat on top of the bed. Right when I open it up to the first page, my phone vibrates with an incoming text. Charlie, how are things with your father? I want to learn more before deciding what I want to share with her. I ignore the text and open the notebook to find stacks of papers stuffed into a folder. Across the top, the papers all read Winwood Nash Financial Group, but I don't understand any of them. I also don't understand why these were hidden beneath my mattress. Clark Nash's words from downstairs repeat in my head. I know you don't think she took those files from this office, Silas, but I know she did. Looks like he was wrong. But why would I have taken them? What would I have needed with them? Who was I trying to protect? My phone buzzes again with another text. Charlie, there's this really neat feature on your phone called Read Receipts. If you're going to ignore texts, you should probably turn that off. Winky face. At least she put a winky face. Me. Not ignoring you, just tired. We have a lot to figure out tomorrow. Charlie.
Yeah.
That's all she says. I'm not sure if I should respond to her effortless reply, but I don't want her to be irritated if I don't respond. Me. Good night, Charlie baby. Winky face. As soon as I hit send, I want to retract it. I don't know what I was going for with that reply. Not sarcasm, but definitely not flirtation either. I decide to regret it tomorrow. Right now, I just need sleep so I can make sure I'm awake enough in the morning to deal with all of this. I shove the notebook back under the mattress and see a wall charger, so I plug it into my phone. I'm too exhausted to keep searching tonight, so I kick off my shoes. It isn't until I lie down that I notice Ezra changed my sheets. As soon as I turn the lamp off and close my eyes, my phone vibrates. Charlie.
Good night, Silas.
Her lack of endearment doesn't go unnoticed, but for some inexplicable reason, the text still makes me smile. Typical Charlie. I think.
Chapter 9. Charlie. It is not a good night. The trapdoor to the attic is in the closet I share with my sister. After I text Silas goodnight, I climb the 3 shelves, which are bursting with fabric, and push upward with my fingertips until it shifts left. I glance back over my shoulder and see that Jeanette hasn't looked up from her phone. This must be normal, me climbing into the attic, leaving her behind. I want to ask if she'll come with me, but it was exhausting just to get her to come to dinner. Another time, I think. I'll figure out how to fix things between us. I don't know why, but as I hoist myself through the hole and into an even smaller space, I picture Silas's face, the tan, smooth skin, his full lips. How many times had I tasted his mouth, and yet I can't remember a single kiss. The air is warm and stuffy. I crawl on my knees to a pile of pillows and press my back to them, straightening my legs out in front of me. There's a flashlight standing atop a pile of books. I click it on, examining their spines. Stories I know but don't remember reading. How odd to be made of flesh, balanced on bone, and filled with a soul you've never met. I pick up her books one by one and read the first page of each. I want to know who she is, who I am. When I've exhausted the pile, I find a larger book at the bottom, bound in creased red leather. My immediate thought is that I found a journal. My hands shake as I fold open the pages. Not a journal. A scrapbook. Letters from Silas. I know this because he signs each one with a sharp S that almost looks like a lightning bolt. And I know I like his handwriting. Direct and distinct. Paperclipped to the top of each note is a photo. Presumably one that Silas has taken. I read one note after another, poring over words. Love letters. Silas is in love. It's beautiful. He likes to imagine a life with me. In one letter, written on the back of a brown paper sack, he details the way we will spend Christmas when we have our own place. Spiked apple cider by the Christmas tree. Raw cookie dough that we eat before we get the chance to bake it. He tells me he wants to make love to me with only candles lighting the room, so that he can see my body glow in the candlelight. The photo paperclipped to the note is of a tiny Christmas tree that looks like it's in his bedroom. We must have set it up together. I find another written on the back of a receipt, in which he details what it feels like to be inside of me. My face grows warm as I read the note over and over, reveling in his lust. The photo paperclipped to this one is of my bare shoulder. His photos pack a punch, just like his words. They take my breath. And I'm not sure if the part of me I can't remember is in love with him. I feel only curiosity toward the dark-haired boy who looks at me so earnestly. I set the note aside, feeling like I'm snooping on someone else's life, and close the book. This belonged to Charlie. I'm not her. I fall asleep surrounded by Silas's words, the sprinkling of letters and sentences swirling around in my head until... A girl drops to her knees in front of me. "Listen to me," she whispers. "We don't have much time." But I don't listen to her. I push her away, and then she's gone. I am standing outside. There is a fire burning from an old metal trash can. I rub my hands together to get warm. From somewhere behind me, I can hear a saxophone playing, but the sound morphs into a scream. That's when I run. I run through the fire that was in the trash can, but now it is everywhere, licking the buildings along the street. I run, choking on smoke, until I see one pink-faced storefront that is free of flame and smoke, though everything around it burns. It is a shop of curiosities. I open the door without thought, because it is the only place safe from the flames. Silas is there waiting for me. He leads me past bones and books and bottles and takes me to a back room. A woman sits on a throne made of broken mirror, staring down at me with a thin smile on her lips. The pieces of mirror reflect slices of light across the walls where they jiggle and dance. I turn to look at Silas, to ask him where we are, but he's gone. Hurry! I wake with a start. Jeanette is leaning through the slat of space in the closet roof, shaking my foot. You have to get up, she says. You don't have any more skip days left. I am still in the dank attic space. I wipe the sleep from my eyes and follow her down the three shelves to our room. I'm touched she knows I'm out of skip days and that she cared enough to wake me up. I'm shaking when I reach the bathroom and turn on the shower. I haven't shaken the dream. I can still see my reflection in the broken shards of her throne. The fire swims in and out of my vision, waiting behind my eyelids every time I blink. If I concentrate, I can smell the ash above the body wash I'm using, above the sickeningly sweet shampoo I pour into my hand. I close my eyes and try to remember Silas's words. You are warm and wet, and your body grips me like it doesn't want me to leave. Jeanette pounds on the door. Late! She yells. I hurry to dress, and we're tumbling out the front door before I realize I don't even know how Jeanette expects we're getting to school today. I told Silas to pick me up yesterday. Amy should be here already, Jeanette says. She folds her arms across her chest and peers down the street. It's like she can't even stand to look at me. I pull out my phone and text Silas to let him know not to pick me up. I also check to see if this Amy has texted me, right as a little silver Mercedes whips around the corner. Amy, I say. I wonder if she's one of the girls I sat with at lunch yesterday. I hardly noticed names and faces. The car pulls to the curb and we walk forward. Jeanette climbs into the back seat without a word, and after a few seconds of deliberation, I open the front door. Amy is black. I stare at her in surprise for a minute before I climb in the car. Hey, she says without looking over. I'm grateful for her distraction because I have a moment to study her. Hi. She's pretty. Her hair, which is lighter than her skin, is braided to her waist. She seems at ease with me, not to mention she's giving my sour sister and me a ride to school. We must be good friends, I decide. Glad to see you're feeling better. Did you figure out what you're going to do about Silas? She asks me.
Silas?
Uh-huh, she says. That's what I thought.
You still don't know. It's a shame, too, because you guys can be really good together when you try.
I sit in silence until we've almost reached the school, wondering what she means. Amy, I say, how would you describe my relationship with Silas to someone who has never met us?
See, this is your problem, she says. You always want to play games.
She pulls up to the front of the school and Jeanette climbs out. It's all like clockwork.
Bye, I call as the door closes.
She's so mean, I say, facing forward again. Amy pulls a face.
And you're queen of nice. Seriously, I don't know what's come over you. You're even more out of it than normal.
I chew on my lips as we pull into the high school parking lot. I open the door before the car has even stopped.
What the hell, Charlie?
I don't wait to hear what else she has to say. I run for the school, my arms wrapped tightly around my torso. Did everyone hate me? I duck my head as I push through the doors. I need to find Silas. People are looking at me as I walk the hallway. I don't look left or right, but I can feel their eyes.
When I reach for my phone to text Silas, it's gone. I ball up my fists. I had my phone when I texted him and told him I didn't need a ride. I must have left it in Amy's car. I'm on my way back toward the parking lot when someone calls my name. Brian. I glance around to see who's watching us as he jogs toward me. His eye still looks a little bruised from where I punched him. I like that. What? I say.
You hit me.
He stops a few feet away like he's afraid I'm going to do it again. I suddenly feel guilty. I shouldn't have done that. Whatever game I'd been playing with him before all of this happened wasn't his fault. I'm sorry, I say. I haven't been myself lately. I shouldn't have done that. It looks like I've told him exactly what he wants to hear. His face relaxes, and he runs a hand along the back of his neck as he looks at me.
Can we go somewhere more private to talk?
I look around at the crowded hallway and shake my head. No.
All right,
he says.
Then we can do this here.
I shift from one foot to another and look over my shoulder. Depending on how long he takes, I can still catch Amy and get the keys to her car and...
It's Silas or me.
My head jerks back to look at him. What?
I love you, Charlie.
Oh, God. I feel itchy all over. I take a step back, looking around for someone to help me get out of this. Now is a really bad time for me, Brian. I need to find Amy and...
I know you guys have history, but you've been unhappy for a long time. That guy's a dick, Charlie. You saw what happened with the shrimp. I'm surprised...
What are you talking about? He looks put out that I've interrupted his speech.
I'm talking about Silas and...
No, the shrimp thing. People are stopping to watch us now. Clusters of nosiness form at lockers. Eyes, eyes, eyes on my face. I'm so uncomfortable with this. I hate it.
Her.
Brian jerks his head left just as a girl pushes through the doors and makes her way past us. When she sees me looking, her face turns a bright pink color, like a shrimp. I recognize her from my class yesterday. She was the one on the floor picking up the books. She's tiny. Her hair is an ugly shade of greenish-brown, like she tried to dye it herself and it went terribly wrong. But even if she hadn't dyed it, it looks... sad. Jagged, uneven bangs, oily and lank. She has a smattering of pimples across her forehead and a nose that's pugged. My first thought is ugly, but it's more of a fact than a judgment. She skitters away before I can blink, disappearing into a crowd of onlookers. I have a feeling she hasn't left. She's waiting right behind their backs. She wants to hear. I felt something. When I saw her face, I felt something. My head is swimming when Brian reaches for me. I let him grab me by the elbow and pull me toward his chest.
It's me or Silas,
he says again. He's being bold since I already punched him for touching me. But I'm not thinking about him. I'm thinking about the girl. The shrimp, wondering if she's back there, hiding behind everyone else.
I need an answer, Charlie.
He has me so close that when I look into his face, I can see the freckles in his eyes. Then my answer is Silas, I say softly. He freezes. I can feel the stiffening of his body.
Chapter 10. Silas. You gonna show up for practice today? Landon asks. He's already standing outside my door and I don't even remember pulling into the parking lot of the school, much less turning off the car. I nod, but fail to make eye contact with him. I'd been so lost inside my own thoughts during the drive over, I didn't even think to prod him for information. I've been hung up on the fact that I didn't wake up with memories. I was hoping Charlie was right, that we would wake up and everything would be back to normal. But we didn't, and it's not. Or at least I didn't wake up with memories. I haven't spoken to Charlie since last night, and her text this morning revealed nothing. I didn't even open the text. It flashed on my lock screen, and I read enough of the first sentence to know I didn't like how it made me feel. My thoughts immediately wandered to who might be picking her up and if she was okay with it. My protective instincts kick in whenever it comes to her, and I don't know if it's always been that way or if it's because she's the only one I can relate to right now. I get out of the car, determined to find her. Make sure she's okay, even though I know she more than likely is. I don't have to know any more about her to know that she doesn't really need me to take care of her. She's fiercely independent. That doesn't mean I won't still try. When I enter the school, it occurs to me that I don't know where to begin searching for her. Neither of us can remember which lockers are ours, and considering this happened to us both during fourth period yesterday, we have no idea where our first, second, or third period classes are. I decide to walk to the administration office and see about getting a new copy of my schedule. Hopefully Charlie thought to do the same, because I doubt they'll give me hers. The secretary is unfamiliar, but she smiles knowingly at me.
Here to see Ms. Ashley Silas.
Ms. Ashley. I start to shake my head no, but she's already pointing me in the direction of an open office door. Whoever Ms. Ashley is, I must visit her enough that my presence in the office isn't unusual. Before I make it to the open office door, a woman steps out. She's tall, attractive, and appears extremely young to be an employee. Whatever she does here, she hasn't been doing it long. She barely looks old enough to be out of college.
Mr. Nash,
she says with a vague smile, flicking her blonde hair back over her shoulder.
Do you have an appointment?
I pause and stop my advancement toward her. I glance back at the secretary right when Ms. Ashley waves it off.
It's fine. I have a few minutes. Come inside.
I move gingerly past her, taking in the nameplate on the door as I enter her office. Avril Ashley, guidance counselor. She closes the door behind me and I look around the office, which is decorated in motivational quotes and typical posters portraying positive messages. I suddenly feel uncomfortable, trapped. I should have said I didn't need to see her, but I'm hoping this counselor, one I apparently visited regularly, will know a few things about my past that may be of help to Charlie and me. I turn, just as Ms. Ashley's hand slides down the door and reaches the lock. She turns it and then begins to saunter toward me. Her hands meet my chest, and right before her mouth connects with mine, I stumble backward and catch myself on a filing cabinet. Whoa, what the hell? She looks offended that I just shook off her advance. This must not be unusual behavior with us. I'm sleeping with the guidance counselor? I immediately think of Charlie, and based on our obvious non-commitment to one another, I question what kind of relationship we had. Why were we even together?
Is something wrong?
Ms. Ashley says. I turn slightly and take a few steps away from her toward the window. Not feeling very well today. I look her in the eyes and force a smile. Don't want to get you sick. My words put her at ease, and she closes the space between us again, this time leaning in and pressing her lips against my neck.
Poor thing,
she purrs.
Want me to make you feel better?
My eyes are wide, darting around the room, mapping out my escape route. My attention falls to the computer on her desk, and then a printer behind her chair. Ms. Ashley, I say, gently pushing her away from my neck. This is wrong on so many levels. She laughs.
You never call me that when we're alone. It's weird.
She's too comfortable with me. I need to get out of here. Avril, I say, smiling at her again. I need a favor. Can you print a copy of mine and Charlie's schedules? She immediately straightens up, her smile whisked away at the mention of Charlie's name. Point of contention, apparently. I'm thinking about switching a couple of my classes so I won't have to be around her as much. Couldn't be further from the truth. Ms. Ashley, Avril, slides her fingers down my chest, the smile reappearing on her face.
Well, it's about time. Finally decided to take the counselor's advice, I see.
Her voice drips with sex. I can see how things must have started up with her, but it makes me feel shallow. It makes me hate who I was. I shift on my feet as she works her way to her seat and begins clicking at her keyboard. She pulls freshly printed pages from the printer and walks them over to me. I attempt to take the schedules from her hand, but she pulls them away with a grin.
Uh-uh,
she says, shaking her head slowly.
These are gonna cost you.
She leans against her desk and lays the sheets of paper beside her, face down. She brings her eyes back to mine, and I can see I'm not leaving without appeasing her. which is the last thing I want to do right now. I take two slow steps toward her and rest my hands on either side of her. I lean into her neck and can hear her gasp when I begin to speak. Avril, I only have 5 minutes left before I have to be in class. There's no way I can do all the things I want to do to you in just 5 minutes. I slip my hand to the schedules lying on her desk and I back away with them. She's tugging on her bottom lip, staring up at me with heated eyes.
Come back during lunch, she whispers. Will an hour be sufficient, Mr. Nash?
I wink at her. I guess it'll have to do, I say, as I head out the door. I don't pause until I'm down the hallway and around the corner, out of her line of sight. The 18-year-old irresponsible side of me wants to high-five myself for having apparently snagged the school counselor, but the reasonable side of me wants to punch myself for doing something like that to Charlie. Charlie is obviously the better choice, and I hate knowing that I was putting that relationship at risk. But then again, so was Charlie. Luckily, the schedules list our locker numbers and combinations. Hers is 543, and mine is 544. I'm guessing that was intentional. I open my locker first and find three textbooks stacked inside. There's a half-empty coffee in front of the books and an empty cinnamon roll wrapper. There are two pictures taped to the inside of the locker, one of Charlie and me, the other just of Charlie. I pull the picture of her down and stare at it. Why, if we weren't happy together, do I have pictures of her in my locker? Especially this one. I obviously took it, as it's similar in style to the pictures hanging around my room. She's sitting cross-legged on a couch. Her head is tilted slightly and she's staring directly at the camera. Her eyes are intense, looking into the camera as if she's looking into me. She's both confident and comfortable, and although she isn't smiling or laughing in the photo, I can tell she's happy. Whenever this was taken, it was a good day for her, for us. Her eyes are screaming a thousand things in this photo, but the loudest is, "I love you, Silas." I stare at it a while longer and then place the photo back inside the locker. I check my phone to see if she's texted. She hasn't. I look around just as Landon approaches from down the hall. He tosses words over his shoulder as he passes me. Looks like Brian isn't quite out of the picture yet, brother. The bell rings. I look in the direction Landon came from and see a heavier crowd of students at that end of the hallway. People seem to be stalling, glancing over their shoulders. Some are looking at me, some are fixated on whatever is at the end of the hallway. I begin to walk in that direction, and everyone's attention falls on me as I pass. A break in the crowd begins to shape, and that's when I see her. She's standing against a row of lockers, hugging herself with her arms. Brian is leaning against one of the lockers, looking at her intently. He looks deep in conversation, whereas she just appears guarded. He spots me almost immediately, and his posture stiffens along with his expression. Charlie follows his gaze until her eyes land on mine. As much as I can assume she doesn't need rescuing, relief falls over her as soon as we lock eyes. A smile tugs at her lips, and I want nothing more than to get him away from her. I spend 2 seconds deliberating. Should I threaten him? Should I hit him like I wanted so badly to hit him yesterday in the parking lot? Neither of these actions feels as though they'll make the point I want to make. You should get to class, I hear her say to him. Her words are quick, a warning, as if she's afraid I've decided to punch him. She doesn't have to worry. What I'm about to do will hurt Brian Finley a hell of a lot more than if I were to just hit him. The second bell rings. No one moves. There are no students rushing to class to avoid being late. No one around me shuffles down the hall at the sound of the bell. They're all waiting, watching, expecting me to start a fight. I wonder if that's what the old Silas would do. I wonder if that's what the new Silas should do. I ignore everyone but Charlie and walk confidently toward her, keeping my eyes trained on her the entire time. As soon as Brian sees me approaching, he takes 2 steps away from her. I look directly at him while I stretch out my hand toward her, giving her the choice to take it and go with me, or remain where she is. I feel her finger slide between mine and she grips my hand tightly. I pull her away from the lockers, away from Brian, away from the crowd of students. As soon as we round the corner, she drops my hand and stops walking.
That was a little dramatic, don't you think? She says.
I turn to face her. Her eyes are narrowed, but her mouth could pass for smiling. I can't tell if she's amused or angry.
They expected a certain reaction from me. What'd you want me to do? Tap him on the shoulder and ask politely if I could cut in?
She folds her arms over her chest.
What makes you think I needed you to do anything?
I don't understand her hostility. It seemed like we left on good terms last night, so I'm confused as to why she seems so angry with me.
She rubs her hands up and down her arms, and then her eyes fall to the floor.
Sorry, she mutters. I just... She looks up at the ceiling and groans. I was just prodding him for information. That's the only reason I was with him in the hallway just now. I wasn't flirting.
Her response catches me off guard. I don't like the look of guilt in her expression. That's not why I pulled her away from him. But I realize now that she thinks I really am upset with her for being with him. I could tell she didn't want to be there, but maybe she doesn't realize how well I've learned to read her. I take a step toward her. When she lifts her eyes to meet mine, I smile.
Would it make you feel better to know I was cheating on you with the guidance counselor?
She sucks in a quick rush of air, and shock registers on her face. You weren't the only one who wasn't committed to us, Charlie. Apparently, we both had issues we needed to work out, so don't be so hard on yourself. Relief probably isn't the reaction a girl should have to finding out her boyfriend has been cheating on her, but it's definitely what Charlie feels right now. I can see it in her eyes, and I can hear it in the pent-up breath she releases.
Wow, she says, her hands falling to her hips. So technically, we're tied.
Tied? I shake my head. This isn't a game I want to win, Charlie. If anything, I'd say we both lost.
Her lips spread into a ghostly grin, and then she looks over her shoulder.
We should figure out where our classes are. I remember the schedules and pull hers out of my back pocket. We're not together until fourth period history. You have English first. It's back in the other hallway, I say, motioning toward her first period classroom. She nods appreciatively and unfolds the schedule.
Smart thinking, she says, glancing it over. She looks back up at me with a wicked smile. I guess you got these from your guidance counselor mistress?
Her words make me wince, even though I shouldn't really feel remorse for whatever happened before yesterday.
Ex-guidance counselor mistress, I clarify with a grin.
She laughs, and it's a laugh of solidarity. As screwed up as our situation is and as confusing as the new information about our relationship is, the fact that we can laugh about it proves that we at least share in the absurdity of it all. And the only thought I have as I walk away from her is how much I wish Brian Finley could choke on her laugh. The first three classes of the day felt foreign. No one in them and nothing discussed seemed familiar to me. I felt like an imposter, out of place. But the instant I walked into fourth period and took a seat next to Charlie, my mood changed. She's familiar. My only familiar thing in a world of inconsistency and confusion. We stole a few glances at each other, but we never spoke during class. We aren't even speaking now as we enter the cafeteria together. I glance at our table, and everyone from yesterday is already seated, save our two empty seats. I nudge my head toward the lunch line. Let's get our food first. She glances up at me briefly before looking back at the table.
I'm not really hungry, she says. I'll just wait for you at the table.
She heads in the direction of our group, and I head toward the cafeteria line. After grabbing my tray and a Pepsi, I walk over to the table and take a seat. Charlie is looking down at her phone, excluding herself from the surrounding conversation. The guy to my right, Andrew, I think, elbows me.
Silas, he says, jabbing me repeatedly. Tell him how much I benched Monday.
I look up at the guy sitting across from us. He rolls his eyes and downs the rest of his soda before slamming it on the table.
Come on, Andrew. You think I'm stupid enough to believe your best friend wouldn't lie for you?
Best friend. Andrew is my best friend, yet I wasn't even sure of his name 30 seconds ago. My attention moves from the two of them to the food in front of me.
I open my soda and take a sip, just as Charlie clenches her waist. It's loud in the cafeteria, but I still hear the rumble of her stomach. She's hungry.
If she's hungry, why isn't she eating?
Charlie, I lean in close to her.
Why aren't you eating?
She dismisses my question with a shrug. I lower my voice even more.
Do you have money?
Her eyes dart up to mine as if I just revealed a huge secret to the entire room. She swallows and then looks away, embarrassed.
No,
she says quietly.
I gave my last few dollars to Jeanette this morning. I'll be fine until I get home.
I set my drink down on the table and push my tray in front of her. Here, I'll go get another one. I stand and go back to the line and get another tray. When I return to the table, she's taken a few bites of the food. She doesn't tell me thank you, and I feel relieved. Making sure she has food to eat isn't a favor I want to be thanked for. It's something I hope she would expect from me.
Do you want to ride home today? I ask her, just as we're finishing up our meal.
Dude, you can't miss practice again. Andrew shoots in my direction. Coach won't let you play tomorrow night if you do. I rub a palm down my face, and then I reach in my pocket and retrieve my keys. Here, I tell her, placing them in her hand. Drive your sister home after school. Pick me up when practice is over. She tries to hand the keys back to me, but I won't take them. Keep them, I tell her. You might need a car today, and I won't be using it. Andrew interrupts.
You're letting her drive your car? Are you kidding me? You've never even let me sit behind the damn wheel.
I look over at Andrew and shrug. You aren't the one I'm in love with. Charlie spits out her drink with a burst of laughter. I glance over at her, and her smile is huge. It lights up her entire face, somehow even making the brown of her eyes seem less dark. I may not remember anything about her, but I would bet her smile was my favorite part of her. This day has been exhausting. It feels like I've been on a stage for hours, acting out scenes I have no script for. The only thing that appeals to me right now is either being in my bed or being with Charlie, or maybe a combination of both. However, Charlie and I both still have a goal, and that's to figure out what the hell happened to us yesterday. Despite the fact that neither of us really wanted to bother with school today, we knew school could lead to an answer. After all, this did happen in the middle of the school day yesterday, so the answer could be related somehow. Football practice may be of some help. I'll be around people I haven't spent much time with in the last 24 hours. I might learn something about myself or about Charlie that I didn't know before, something that could shed some light on our situation. I'm relieved to find all the lockers have names on them, so it isn't hard to locate my gear. What is hard is trying to figure out how to put it on. I struggle with the pants, all the while trying to look like I know what I'm doing. The locker room slowly empties out as all the guys make their way to the field until I'm the only one left. When I think I've got everything situated, I grab my jersey off the top shelf of the locker to pull it on over my head. A box catches my eye, located in the back of the top shelf of my locker. I pull it toward me and take a seat on the bench. It's a red box, much larger than a box that would just contain a piece of jewelry. I pull the lid off and find a few pictures at the very top. There aren't any people in the pictures. They seem to be of places. I flip through them and come to a picture of a swing set. It's raining, and the ground beneath the swing is covered in water. I flip it over, and written on the back, it says, "Our first kiss." The next picture is of a back seat, but the view is from the floorboard looking up. I flip it over. "Our first fight." Third is a picture of what looks like a church, but it's only the picture of the doors, where we met. I flip through all the pictures until I finally get to a letter folded at the bottom of the box. I pick it up and unfold it. It's a short letter in my handwriting addressed to Charlie. I begin to read it, but my phone buzzes, so I reach over and unlock it. "Charlie, what time is your practice over?" "Me, not sure. I found a box of stuff in the locker room. Don't know if it'll help, but there's a letter in it."
"Charlie, what does it say?"
"Silas!" Someone yells from behind me. I spin around and drop two of the pictures in my hands. There's a man standing at the door with an angry look on his face. "Get on the field!" I nod, and he continues on down the hall. I put the pictures back in the box and set it back inside my locker. I take a deep, calming breath and make my way out to the practice field. Two lines are formed on the field, both rows of guys hunched forward and staring at the guy in front of them. There's an obvious opening, so I jog toward the empty spot and copy what the other players are doing.
For shit's sake, Nash, why are you not wearing your shoulder pads?
Someone yells. Shoulder pads. Crap. I skip out of line and run back to the locker room. This is going to be the longest hour of my life. It's odd I can't remember the rules of football. Can't be that hard, though. Just run back and forth a few times and practice will be over. I locate pads behind the row of lockers. Luckily, they're easy to put on. I rush back out onto the field and everyone is scattering, running around like ants. I hesitate before walking onto the field. When a whistle blows, someone shoves me from behind.
Go!
He yells, frustrated. The lines, the numbers, the goalposts, they mean nothing to me as I stand on the field amongst the other guys. One of the coaches shouts an order, and before I know it, the ball is being thrown in my direction. I catch it. What now? Run. I should probably run. I make it 3 feet before my face meets the astroturf. A whistle blows. A man yells. I stand up just as one of the coaches stalks in my direction.
What the hell was that? Get your damn head in the play!
I look around me, the sweat beginning to trickle down my forehead. Landon's voice rings out behind me.
Dude, what the hell is wrong with you?
I turn and look at him just as everyone huddles around me. I follow their motions and lay my arms over the backs of the guys to my left and right. No one speaks for several seconds, and then I realize they're all looking at me. Waiting. I think they want me to say something. I get the feeling it's not a prayer circle. You gonna call a play or what? The guy to my left says. I stutter. You, I point to Landon. Do that thing. Before they can question me, I pull apart and the huddle breaks. Coach is gonna bench him. I hear someone mumble behind me. A whistle blows, and before the sound even leaves my ears, a freight train crashes into my chest. Or at least it feels that way. The sky is above me. My ears are ringing. I can't pull in a breath. Landon is hovering over me. He grabs my helmet and shakes it.
What the hell is wrong with you?
He looks around and then back down at me. His eyes narrow. Stay on the ground. Act sick. I do what he says and he jumps up to a stand.
I told him not to come to practice, coach, Landon says. He's had strep all week. I think he's dehydrated.
I close my eyes, relieved for my brother. I kind of like this kid.
What the hell are you even doing here, Nash?
The coach is kneeling now.
Go to the locker room and get hydrated. We've got a game tomorrow night.
He stands and motions for one of the assistant coaches.
Get him a Z-Pack and make sure he's ready for the field tomorrow.
Landon pulls me up. My ears are still ringing, but I'm able to breathe now. I make my way toward the locker rooms, relieved to be off the field. I should have never walked on in the first place. Not smart, Silas. I make it back to the locker room and change out of my gear. As soon as I get my shoes on, I hear footsteps nearing the locker room from down the hall. I glance around and spot an exit on the far wall, so I rush to it and push it open. Luckily, it leads right out to the parking lot. I'm immediately relieved to see my car. I rush over to it just as Charlie climbs out of the driver's side, hopping onto her feet as I approach. I'm so relieved to see her, to just have someone to relate to, that I don't even think about what I do next. I grab her wrist and pull her to me, wrapping my arms around her in a tight hug. My face is buried in her hair and I let out a sigh. She feels familiar, safe, makes me forget that I can't even remember.
What are you doing?
She's stiff against me. Her cold reaction reminds me that we don't do things like this. Silas and Charlie did things like this.
Shit.
I clear my throat and release her, taking a quick step back. Sorry, I mutter, force of habit.
We have no habits.
She pushes past me and walks around my car.
Do you think you've always been this mean to me?
I ask her. She looks at me from over the hood and nods.
My money's on yes. You're probably a glutton for punishment.
More like a masochist, I mutter. We both climb into my car, and I have two places I plan on going tonight. The first being my house to shower. But I'm sure if I asked her if she wanted to come along, she'd say no, just to spite me.
Instead, I head in the direction of my house and don't give her a choice.
"Why are you smiling?" she asks, 3 miles into our drive.
I didn't realize I was. I shrug. Just thinking.
About what?
I glance at her, and she's waiting for my answer with an impatient frown. I was wondering how the old Silas ever broke through your hard exterior. She laughs.
What makes you think he did?
I would smile again, but I don't think I've stopped. You saw the video, Charlie. You loved him. I pause for a second, then rephrase.
Me. You loved me.
She loved you, Charlie says, and then smiles. I'm not even sure if I like you yet. I shake my head with a soft laugh.
I don't know myself very well, but I must have been extremely competitive because I just took that as a challenge.
Took what as a challenge? You think you can make me like you again?
I look over at her and give my head the slightest shake. No. I'm going to make you fall in love with me again. I can see the gentle roll of her throat as she swallows, but just as fast as she let her guard down, it flies back up.
Good luck with that, she says, facing forward again. I'm pretty sure you'll be the first guy to ever compete with himself over the affection of a girl.
Maybe so, I say, as we pull into my driveway. But my money's on me. I turn the car off and get out. She doesn't unbuckle. You coming? I need to take a quick shower. She doesn't even look at me.
I'll wait in the car.
I don't argue. I close the door and head inside to shower, thinking about the small smile I could swear was playing in the corner of her mouth. And while winning her over again isn't my main priority, it's definitely the new backup plan in case neither of us can figure out how to revert back to who we were before yesterday. Because even through all the bullshit, her cheating on me with Brian, me cheating on her with the counselor, our families in turmoil, we still obviously tried to make it work. There had to be something there, something deeper than attraction or a simple childhood bond that made me fight to keep her. I want to feel that again. I want to remember what it feels like to love someone like that, and not just anyone. I want to know what it feels like to love Charlie.
Chapter 11. Charlie. I'm standing on the edge of the lawn, looking down his street when he walks up behind me. I don't hear him approach, but I smell him. I don't know how, since he smells just like the outdoors. What are you looking at? He asks. I stare at the houses, each of them immaculate and manicured to the point of irritation. It makes me want to shoot a gun into the air, just to see all the quiet people inside scramble out. This neighborhood needs a little life breathed into it. It's strange how money seems to silence a neighborhood, I say quietly. On my street, where no one has money, it's so loud. Sirens blaring, people shouting, car doors slamming, stereos thumping. There's always someone somewhere making noise. I turn and look up at him, not expecting the reaction I have to seeing his damp hair and smooth jaw. I focus on his eyes, but that isn't much better. I clear my throat and look away. I think I prefer the noise. He takes a step until we're shoulder to shoulder, both staring at the taciturn street.
No, you don't. You don't prefer either.
He says this like he knows me, and I want to remind him he doesn't know me at all, but he puts his hand on my elbow. Let's get out of here, he says. Go do something that doesn't belong to Charlie and Silas. Something that's ours. You're talking about us like we're body invaders. Silas closes his eyes and tilts his head back. You have no idea how many times a day I think about invading your body. I don't intend to laugh as hard as I do, but I trip over my own feet, and Silas reaches down to catch me. We're both laughing as he rights me on my feet and rubs his hands up and down my arms. I look away. I'm tired of liking him. I only have a day and a half worth of memories, but they're all filled with me not hating Silas. And now he's made it his personal mission to make me love him again. It's annoying that I like it. Go away, I say. He raises his hands in surrender and takes a step back.
This far?
Farther. Another step.
Better.
Yes,